News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good to have you along on this Monday. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. And again, good to have you along. Thanks for listening. We're going to get very local here real quick.
We are, and staying local. As on Friday, we had Councilman Ben Reynolds on to speak with us about everything going on with the city. And this morning, we have District 2 Councilman William Carroll. Good morning, Councilman.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all? And good morning to the city of Mobile and everyone that's out there listening. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Always good to have you. Thank you for being here. We've got a lot of things we want to touch on. We can maybe start with where we are with the special counsel report that came back. And what's your take on that, William?
Well, I think that the special counsel did its job and the council did its job also. And there's quite a bit of information there for everyone to read and see and understand how the process worked and how the administration came to their decisions.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot pending on that as we've seen report after report. I was telling my wife last week, I said, I wish they would just stop putting these reports out that I have to read, but saying it sarcastically.
Homework, kinda, yeah, homework.
So that saga continues, and I guess we'll see what the next move is, but probably have to wait possible pending stuff between people here?
You don't know. I don't know. I just say when you don't know, push a pawn. So let's just see what happens in the game of chess here. I think that the process was a good process, and I think that the administration has watched, heard, and listened and have made the best decisions possible for the city of Mobile.
He hasn't, there's no lawsuit yet. Is that a lawsuit that he is?
Well, that's NBC 15 was reporting there might be something on the way. So we'll see later this week on that. Let's talk about what will be on the council agenda for tomorrow. Another story we've been following closely for some time, and demolition for the Civic Center, I believe, will be up for vote tomorrow. How are things looking? Are we financially on track? Are we, as far as the timeline, still on track for tearing this one down and putting up the new Civic Center?
You know that let's look at things two ways real quick. Number one, in order for the city to take on any contract, it has to have all of financing in place to start it. So the demolition of the Civic Center is one separate contract. It's not tied to the construction or renovation or what's going to happen with the new building itself. So the city can take on that contract as an individual project by itself. It's worth roughly $4 million and some change, or, you know, right there. So the money's in place for it. It's ready to move forward. The resolution is on the agenda to move forward with it. It could possibly move forward tomorrow, too.
Okay.
Where, turning our attention to the construction of the new Civic Center, there's a lot of people who are concerned that there may not be a theater as part of that new construction and new Civic Center. I think it's going to be an incredible building. It looks like the venue itself is going to be pretty amazing. But there are those in the art community, I guess, starting with them, that are concerned about a theater or lack thereof.
Well, you know, I tend to agree with everyone that's concerned about a theater there. I thought originally that we shouldn't tear down a theater that was in place. I thought it was a good structure itself. Mobile, that stage is probably the largest stage in between Jacksonville and New Orleans. Mm. And sometimes you have to have these larger stages to have the larger plays come to your city. Sanger can't accommodate the type of plays and acts that the theater can at this time. Matter of fact, our local dancers, I don't know if the stage at the Sanger is large enough to accommodate them with some of the plays, some of the acts that they perform. So I think that there's a dire need for a theater, and I think that the city needs to come up with a way to make sure that we're going to have a theater for those performing arts, or playing, and to have a theater for those performing arts here in the very near future. It's important to us here.
District 2 Councilman William Carroll in studio.
And I've talked about it before, but that skyline is just, it'll be changing rapidly. It already is with the Corps of Engineers building that's going up and looking pretty good so far. And then once, if the Civic Center plans, you know, stay to form, be moving the whole thing a little closer to the interstate, right? So we're going to have a completely different look right down there.
Yeah, that's right. It moves to the east. I want to say maybe 60 yards from where it is originally now, and it'll run along the Claiborne Street side, and the face of it, which is the western elevation, looks great. You know, I kind of commented on the northern elevations, and I think we needed a little bit more pop, you know, a little wow effect right mm-hmm. there. Kind of didn't like, my personal opinion, I didn't like the windows. I thought that they could change a little bit, look more like that building across the street from them. I don't know where the ARB is on this, but hopefully they've seen some of the same things that I have and we have as a council, and I know that the architects have said the same thing, so I think we can look for some minor changes there. So,
what does a demolition look like? And you know a lot about this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, of course. We're not blowing it up, which I think some people wanted to see just for the view of it. But demolishing it little bit by little bit, how is that going to look, you think? Are they just taking walls down, or how exactly do you demolish it without blowing it up?
Well, I mean, it's an easy task, but it's a little bit longer than the others. Well, the first thing that happens is you go in and you take out any piece or portion of the building that needs to be saved or wants to be saved, or people that want to get certain things out that are usable elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So those things will happen first and pretty quick. The removal of the murals and things like that will happen before, you know, you ever take a wrecking ball to it. So those things will happen. And then after that, you'll see a bunch of safety stuff go up, and a bunch of area alarms should go up also because of the proximity of the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Then you'll see dust control items start to appear, especially, you know, with the way that it's being demolished. And then you see pathways taken in areas of ingress and egress that are set up to get the trucks in and out. Once those things are done, you'll start to see them push it over. Now, how they're going to push it over, if they're going to use maybe a long arm reach excavator or a ball or a hammer or a sectional piece, or they just take down the brick off the walls and then start stripping the steel, we don't know. So we just have to see how Sabre approaches it.
Well, are the other council members jealous of you because all the cool stuff happens in your district?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, so today it's a cavalcade of stars down on the water with Governor Ivey and mm-hmm. Senator Britton.
Yeah, hey, Congressman Carl, everyone will be down to celebrate the grant for the Mobile River Bridge and Bayway Project, $550 million grant there. So they're celebrating it, but as we know, the celebration of money coming in is a far cry from celebrating the bridge being started or done.
Well, you know, I beg to differ there. I don't know what's going to truly happen, but the $550 million actually gives us a way to actually start a groundbreaking here. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think we can start to look forward to have some type of progress made with the bridge itself. You know, as all of you know, I live downtown. I mean, in the heart of it. I'm on Broad Street. So on a Thursday, Friday afternoon, sometimes on a Saturday morning, there's so much traffic due to the delays at the tunnel that traffic backs up in front of my house from government all the way back to Texas and sometimes back to, you know, Virginia Street on a bad day. On any given day, it's high traffic. But when you look at the interstate, it backs all the way back to, I think that's almost the Duval exit. Mm. And then going through Government Street on a Friday afternoon is almost impossible mm-hmm. then during this time of year trying to get through the tunnel. So this will be a welcome approach to getting traffic across the Mobile River and into Baldwin County and over into the vacation and tourist spot. You know, it helps us downtown breathe a little bit. So we're looking forward to it.
How long has that situation been this bad on Government in particular? I don't remember that always being the case. And you've lived down there for a long time, so you would know. But this backing up Government past Broad, is that a new twist to all of this?
Well, I think that in the 70s it wasn't so bad. In the 80s when I was in high school, you know, we could jump on, and actually we used to leave McGill sometimes and run over to the Gulf. It wasn't as bad as this, but you got to look at it like this: as more and more people began to drive, have cars, larger families with multiple kids. God, it's five cars in my driveway when all my kids are there. I mean, some of my friends say I have a parking lot. Yeah. So imagine that, you know, the driving is a little bit different than what it was 20 years ago with more cars and needing additional access. So I would say from the late 90s through now, it's gotten increasingly worse because of the additional cars that are added to the market.
We're talking with District 2 Councilman William Carroll, and driving across this weekend, seems to me like more people are on the causeway than ever also, and not necessarily just to get some food down there, but just to get across. These summer backups both ways have absolutely gotten insane. I imagine opening things up with a new bridge and new bayway, that'll economically cause an effect economically for the city as well.
Well, you mean if people aren't going to stop because they have to wait? I would think so. You know, I love the causeway. You know, it's a local secret for some of us. And also how to exit at Canal Street is also a local secret, too, for some of us. Knowing how to jump down and go back around I-165 and come over the Cochrane Africatown Bridge, you know, sometimes to avoid the traffic. But you can't even do that anymore because of the two lights that are there at the tunnel and in front of Austell. So it backs up now even on the Austell, in front of Austell at the Cochrane Africatown Bridge here.
Yeah, and you got to be really careful going if you're on if you're on I-165, that's the connector, right?
That's the connector, yes.
So I've done that a couple of times and wasn't ready for the volume of traffic right there trying to get off onto
Bayshore.
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, wow. So it's like all the secrets are out now, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah, to be honest, and this bridge hopefully will, with the with its size and the six-lane capacity, will, you know, alleviate some of the backup and additional traffic. My question is what happens when it bottlenecks down into I-10 on the other side?
I know.
You know, what's going to happen there? So we have yet to see what's going to happen. And the other thing is, in my mind, is the closing of the change of the Cloverleaf downtown at Fort Condi. What's going to happen there, too? You know, there's a lot of things that we haven't seen yet. Now, you know, we don't know what the traffic studies look like, but I'm interested to see what it's going to do to downtown.
We're talking with District 2 Councilman William Carroll. When we come back, Amtrak back in the news and whether the city will put forward some money for that. So we'll ask about Amtrak, and then we haven't even gotten to the airports. So a lot of questions for Councilman Carroll as we come back right here on Mobile Mornings.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, William. If you want to text a question that, you know, an answer you're curious about, 251-343-0106 to Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings. Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:22. Longtime friend William Carroll is the District 2 councilman, and he agreed to come in and chat with us about a lot of things City Council this morning. Thank you, man, for coming in.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So it looks like we're coming to the finish line on a few things. Like you were saying, Dalton, we follow these things, and not everything's at the finish line, but it looks like Amtrak is just about there, William. Where are you on this? Where's council on this?
Well, you know, the council, we were faced with a lot of things to think about right here. One, originally the business deal on this was kind of shaky, kind of, you know, off the wall. How is it that they're asking Mobile to put up $3 million when everywhere else the states actually pay for the Amtrak itself? I think that that was originally just a bad way to go. I actually told the administration that. I think we got to a point to where we've had the port contribute $1 million and also the city contribute $1 million, and hopefully the state will come on with a portion of that $3 million also and get us there. Currently, the administration's come up with a way for Amtrak or them not to come back to us until after the third year and the fourth year, so that they can't ask us for any more money in between, you know, the contract starting and ending before they actually ask for money for the next go around, which gives us a chance to evaluate whether or not it was a worthy adventure for us. But what we have to remember is that two things here. One, we live in a drive market where people are used to driving, you know, 2 to 3 hours to get to a venue. That's a given. But what you also have to remember about that is as people age, they don't drive like that. There are other people out there that need a different type of transportation to get around. And I think that the non-driving market is also entitled to a way to travel from city to city or from point to point for entertainment and tourist venues also. So that was a major point in my decision. In District 2, we have so many places that we have seniors that don't drive. We have Cathedral Place. We have centers. We have the one across the street from me, Emerson Gardens, where people actually either ride the bus or they need a different type type of transportation. So this helps them, actually. So in my mind, it's a positive move, even if the city is losing a little bit, because you have to look at it the same way you look at the transit system. We subsidize the metro transit system no matter what you say. Every year, we're probably giving them, I think, somewhere between $500,000 and $600,000 to subsidize the transit system and the bus system that we have in the city. So you have to look at it that way.
And I guess down the line, with all these new projects, more incentive for people to come from New Orleans or Mississippi into Mobile to see events at the Civic Center or, you know, Heritage House. There's plenty of museums, things of that nature that people might want to come to. But going actually from Mobile to New Orleans for the Saints games, or I imagine a lot of people will be hopping on just to go to Biloxi. I remember growing up and seeing at the bus stop in town every Friday, people would just drive over there, hop in the bus, and head over to Biloxi for the weekend. I could see the Amtrak being used for that by a lot of people.
Oh, God, you're right. You know, I don't know if they have a platform there to stop, but, you know, that's an idea in itself. You know, in my mind, I truly see Amtrak as a more of an entertainment venue for people going from Mobile to New Orleans, or Mobile, Moss Point, Biloxi in between, simply because that's a day trip sometimes. You know, people get on, they don't have to be worried about a cocktail or something like that. You know, can have an enjoyable trip going back over, going over and back. So that's what I mean when I say we are a drive market. When you're driving yourself, you can't enjoy those types of things. But if you're actually on the train, you can have a very relaxed and enjoyable day and a good time and enjoy the ride and have great communications with your friends, have go to a great venue and come back and do the same thing and have a great day. So it adds to the value of a weekend trip as opposed to having to do some of the drive work yourself.
Well, you and the council have been through dealing with so much stuff in the past year, maybe more than that. A lot of these council members are first-time council members as well. Where's the, you know, describe to me what this council is, where's their drive, where's their energy, where's their sense of duty? I think all this is wore out the city, and we're just viewing it, and you guys are in the middle of it.
Well, you know, we have some young council members there, and sometimes the learning curves on things are a little bit different. Sometimes you have people with their own ideals, principles, and values, and sometimes that's an office conversation where you say, hey, man, there's 210,000 people in the city of Mobile, and sometimes you have to listen to the voices of everybody here. It's a nonpartisan situation, and ideals and values and political fronts don't fit. You know, our job is to fit the footprint of what the people are asking us for and to make sure that we accommodate the needs of the city and what those basic needs are. A lot of times, if you're watching the council meetings, you'll hear in particular council members say, well, I think this is the best way to go, and people have hired me to do a task and to make a decision, and then I go back and tell them what I did. And I just don't see it operating that way. I take a lot of breath to hear what's happening out there, to put the feelers out, to make sure that we're making the right decisions. And I think probably 95% of us do that all the time, and sometimes there's some 5% decisions that are made with what I call best value and background knowledge, because sometimes there are just some things that are going on in the background that everybody just doesn't see that are inside the city.
Sure.
Councilman William Carroll, we appreciate you coming on with us. Just we have this last minute here. The Africatown Heritage House, seems like things are really rolling along there, and business picking up a little bit. Pretty cool to have that here in our own backyard.
You know, it's great. They just had a weekend out there that was, you know, intensely good. And I hope to see more and more people coming to the Africatown Heritage House. The Africatown Redevelopment Corporation is doing well with new structures and new homes. They've got, I think, 2 or 3 now completed. I think we need to get everybody to go out there and see how the neighborhood's coming back, and encourage everybody to invest in the neighborhood themselves so that we can continue to grow places in the city that are less fortunate and that are underserved.
Yeah. But that is a cool neighborhood out there. Yeah. And reviving that would be awesome. William Carroll, thanks for dropping by.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
District 2 Councilman William Carroll, 830 FM Talk 106.5. More Mobile mornings after the break. We'll turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. Hey, 834 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings on a Monday. Right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we are good, and summer coming to a close for so many as school gets started here for a lot of folks here in the next week or so. I think some parents out there might need some bigger kid haulers for this this fall and moving forward, and I know at McConnell Automotive you have some big ones and some really nice ones.
That's right, we do. We got a bunch of Yukon XLs on the new car side, brand new. They're nice. I want to thank everybody for coming in this weekend. We got a lot of trades. Traded in a 24 AT4 Sierra. It's got the diesel in it and has hardly any miles on it. The guy bought a new boat and came over here and bought a three-quarter ton. So, like I said, we've got a great selection over here. You can check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And come on by and see us. Check out the lot. It looks like it's a beautiful day today. So, we got a mile sitting out front waiting to go.
All right. Sounds good, Louie. We appreciate your time this morning.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Daily Olympic Reports with Dan and Dalton on FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. And just a fabulous opening show. I thought it was so artsy and so alive and vibrant. And crude and disgusting. also, did you see that, not to rag on military people, but I think it was members of the French military, they proudly raised the Olympic flag and it was upside down. So they're
really?
Not, they're not getting...
Was that a sign of distress? Or?
I don't think that was... It was unintentional.
Okay.
It wasn't to signal distress to the audience that you're not going to believe this opening ceremony coming up. You know, kind of let us know.
Well, with that being the French military, I don't think that would have been outside of the range of possibilities because, you know, not everyone in France was okay with how that opening ceremony went.
Yeah, I would think not.
Yeah, it was vulgar, I think, to say the least. And then the whole back and forth about whether, I didn't watch the whole opening ceremony, but being online this weekend, I think I've got a pretty good handle and saw video and pictures, some that I can't believe were there actually testicles viewed in. Did one guy have them hanging out of the bottom of his pants there in that Last Supper thing? That's what online was telling me.
Well, sometimes there is, how do I say this? I probably don't. But sometimes you can make a mistake, like, say, at the pool. You know, you're not trying. So maybe this guy that wasn't in his intention.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know.
You wear short enough shorts, it's bound to happen, I guess. And that's what this person was doing. But the Last Supper thing and then people coming out to say, oh, it wasn't the Last Supper. It was a nod to, you know, the
Greek
Olympics.
Thing?
Well, yeah, Dionysus, the Greek god. And,
yeah.
And he's like the god of partying, right? So he's Mr. Let's Have a Good Time. Or which one? Bacchus, right? The little blue guy that they had on
You got me on that one.
So this is what happens when you put the theater kids in charge. I know a lot of people are boycotting, and I understand, and I sympathize. And I was incredibly perplexed, first off, that they would take it in that direction. But then I stepped back and thought for a second, this is France.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing French things.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to, I don't know if the intent was to mock Christianity. That's certainly how it came off.
I think they
were looking for shock value.
Yeah,
and honestly,
so.
The people that think you're going to get shock value from mocking Christianity, and I saw several people say, it's kind of passé these days. Like, Christianity, for a lot of the world, is the punching bag. And you know, Christians are upset about it, but who are they trying to impress, really? I mean, if you really wanted a shocking opening ceremony, this place that's had terrorist attack within its walls, I would maybe take a look at mocking some of those people, but we all know that they're too scared and that the social justice, you know, media would absolutely be running that story. If they mocked Muslims...
Mm-hmm.
That would be front page every single day, every single hour.
You're right.
But it's just, you know, we've seen it over and over again. I would just love to have an Olympics where I can be fine watching the Olympics. Mm-hmm. I love it for the sport of it. You know, the opening ceremonies, it's been fine in the past, whatever. I think a lot of people tune in for the opening ceremony and don't give a rip about the rest of the games. I'm kind of the opposite. I love the sport. I love seeing especially local athletes in individual sports that don't get the time of day during football season, you know, baseball.
Well, but Paige generally, Madden.
But Paige Madden. I don't think Paige Madden had a part in putting together that opening ceremony.
That ties it in with what William Carroll was talking about. Paige Madden had to take a transit bus to get to a pool. I mean, it's like the sport isn't even supported widely in Mobile, and here she is again in the Olympics.
And it's so
That's
cool.
Amazing.
And she and so many other Americans have put their life yep. into what used to be an amateur sport. I guess it still is technically in a lot of ways. Even though they're getting, you know, big sponsorship deals and things of that nature, but they grind day in and day out. And she started that grind here in Mobile.
Yep.
And it's so great for me to watch some of these athletes reach the peak, the absolute peak of their abilities and really the human ability, and then go out and put it on the line. And these artsy fartsy opening ceremony people who are looking to get a shock out of people, that's they want you to be shocked. They want you to talk about boycotting or whatever. And all it does is take away from the people who these Olympic Games are really supposed to be about. And that's what I hate. And, you know, I understand and I sympathize with people who are going to boycott all of the Olympics. But you have 2.5, 3 weeks here of pure sport for the most part with people going at it. And I know some athletes over the years have also, you know, caused boycotts of their own from their political leanings and making their political stances known. Like Steve Kerr coming out and endorsing Kamala Harris day one. Of being over there, the coach of the men's basketball team. It's like, you didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be Team America yeah. right now, all together. But
yeah, I didn't know we did that.
I'm going to keep watching the games because I love the actual sport of it.
So one thing I noticed about the coverage of the opening ceremonies was big time and blasted, really, critical of the opening ceremonies on Fox News and Breitbart, and there was outrage, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there was a level of outrage, you know, there was a level of outrage for sure. And then I said, well, let me just find out. Let me go to NBC. What, the Olympics are on NBC, aren't they? They're on NBC.
Yeah.
So I went to and found this article from today.com, not even NBCnews.com. I didn't see any coverage of it there.
No, I think they might have taken it offline.
And
NBC.
Today.com just had, like, some people found offense to the, you know, it was in a broader article about the Olympics opening ceremony, not in the vein of being critical of it, just in talking about the entire ceremony itself. Oh, and by the way, some people found offense to some of the things done. And then I thought that the organizers or organizer, people who were behind that piece of theater, I could call it a piece of something else, but they were quickly, I'm with you, I think that they knew this was going to get a rise out of a lot of people. And then they quickly said, no. This is, you've misinterpreted this, like, we're the artists here. We'll tell you how to feel about this.
Yeah.
You misinterpreted it. It was about X, not Z. And also, boy, if we offended anybody, we're sorry about that. But they were standing by their work. They were almost too ready with a reply not to think they didn't need a reply.
Yeah, like most people say, the art is in the eye of the beholder, mm-hmm. right? Whoever's looking at that art can make of it what they will. But in this case, they're like, no. That is not what you... But their actual apology... And remember, this wasn't just stateside outrage. This isn't just
The
U.S. getting upset about this. You had the Catholic Bishops Conference of France.
Mm-hmm.
And politically, they are in just as much or more of a politically charged environment, left versus right, in France.
Right now.
With... immigration also being a huge, huge issue. And you have the right and Le Pen saying, we need to get France back to France for the French, you know, instead of importing so many people, many of whom are trying to cause harm. I mean, some of the footage from France, kind of like a lot of the footage from Ireland Just can't believe it's happening in some of these places. But
England, too.
But the left is also very fringe there, and that's what they did. They put the very far left in charge of putting together this opening ceremony. Their actual response over the weekend, the organizers' brief apology. They said there was never an intention to show disrespect to a religious group. If people have taken any offense, we are, of course, really sorry. And according to their description of the scene here, so the one with DJ Barbara Butch, that was the squatty lady in the middle,
mm-hmm.
or man, I don't even know.
I know.
No clue. DJ Barbara Butch. So at the center there, described by organizers as an LGBT icon. The scene continued with a mostly naked figure painted blue and portrayed by some actor singing a raunchy song in character as Dionysus, the Greek god of wine. According to the Paris's own description of this scene, the one that people said, well, that looks a lot like The Last Supper. It said, the banquet table is transformed into a dance floor to showcase a variety of dance styles, while on the barge, the choreographic ensemble performs to the sound of Eurodance. I mean, it sounds incredibly artsy-fartsy, like you said, and European at the same time. Elon Musk, he said this was extremely disrespectful to Christians. The Catholic Bishops Conference of France said that certain elements, quote, made Christianity the subject of derision and mockery, which we deeply deplore. This morning, our thoughts are with all Christians of all continents who were offended by the outrageousness and provocation of a few scenes. And Katie Britt, you know, she also posted on Twitter, our own U.S. Senator, this was an intentional choice to mock Christianity and Christians. It's disgraceful. And it's the same kind of bizarre craziness that's being pushed on children and teenagers across America. We need to turn our eyes back to God and restore common sense.
And there are some of you out there right now, maybe you're mocking Dalton and I for trying to explain away what is hard to explain. This is not our lane, okay? A production like this, maybe for some of you, it is your lane. Okay. Don't do it at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying. It's like, it's art. It's expressive. But okay, all right, that's fine. The opening ceremony of the Olympics, it's not, my hands up, and all I'm saying, you can say you're wrong, Brennan, fine. I'm saying that's not where it belongs. That sort of art, that sort of production, have it. Enjoy it. But the world is watching the Olympic Games, including children. It doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
That's not the platform.
Let's look at the text line. Buddy says the blue guy was Gerard Depardieu's son-in-law. Is that true? He was a little bitty blue guy that they had up there on the I think they had a dish over him, like he was being unveiled as the entree. Gardner says boycott the sponsors, not the sports. I agree with it.
Well,
and
C Spire jumped out.
I just hate, maybe it's because I've loved sports for so long. I hate that athletes are being dragged into this thing.
Yeah.
And but I think, you know, a lot of people, if you want to boycott, that's fine. I'm not telling people whether to boycott or not. Texter here, why would NBC cover something that doesn't portray the Olympics in the best light possible? You're talking about NBC. They want to completely memory hole this thing, at least for the next 3 weeks, while they try to get people to download the Peacock app and keep their TV on NBC. So they are going to make as little comment on this as possible.
And not have, because C Spire making the decision that they did, this Mississippi-based company we're all familiar with, they just said, look, the ads that we were going to be running, they're out. We're not doing it. And I would think that I don't know how the sales department at NBC may be scrambling to take the temperature of other major sponsors to make sure they don't do the same thing.
Yeah. If Tucker Carlson would have been in the opening ceremony, there would have been immediate advertiser boycotts. We can't have him on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't Have Meta says, y'all let France know the next time a foreign country or other group tries to invade them, call the woke trannies to come save them. The Christian nations aren't interested in saving our enemies. He also said the blue guy needed a cowbell. Oh, that would have been great. Sean, the heavy metal show was badass, though. Yeah, the Marie Antoinette and her head, and then they had some popular French metal band playing at some castle. Pretty cool. I don't know. Is that Olympic opening ceremony? I liked that part for sure. But it was, again, kind of a...
Well, did they do the beheading?
I think she was just standing there with her head in her hands. But again, I didn't see the entire thing. Is it true that the Israeli athletes were turned away? I'm not sure. I need to look into that further. Let's see here.
I know that they were warning Israeli athletes and fans that were going to the games to their nation put out.
Well, that was the big thing going in. And I thought with the major part of this opening ceremony was how were they going to keep it safe? Because terrorism is such a major worry, especially right now there. And to have all of these athletes sailing down the River Sin, and they at the time before the train stations were firebombed Friday morning, they were saying there were going to be around 800,000 people along the banks of the river watching this. And just think of how much law enforcement they had to put out there and how all of the different pre-searches and everything just to make sure this stayed as safe as possible. Not out of the woods, obviously. And then you had this big power outage that happened in Paris, I think Saturday or Sunday. I don't know if we've seen a result from what that was exactly, but story is avoiding any kind of violence here over these next 3 weeks.
No doubt. The weather was a problem, the avoiding of the violence. And then you have to do something really, really out there to top all of that in terms of the coverage of the Olympics and the games themselves. And with that opening ceremony, congratulations, France. You pulled it off.
You pulled it off.
It is Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Glad to have you along on this Monday. Again, that text line, 251-343-0106. Feel free to join the show.
Give a quick shout out.
Sure.
My grandpa riding with my dad, driving from Florida to Pennsylvania. Long drive today. They're listening in this morning. So, hey, grandpa.
Hey, grandpa.
Hey,
how
grandpa.
You doing? That's cool. I like that. Coming up, bored out of their mind with this show they're listening to. Your grandpa feels like a hostage. Like, can we change the channel? I'd like to hear some country music or something like that.
Jeff Borsho on the way, and he'll have State Representative Jennifer Fiddler on in hour number one. State Rep Shane Stringer in hour two. That's a rare double up with those two state representatives.
Yeah.
And then Dale Jackson from WVNN in hour number three. Let's clear up some misunderstandings.
Do we have an apology?
Yeah, so I asked, because I got so much of my news of the opening ceremony. After everyone was talking about it, I said, well, I really just don't want to watch that. Mm-hmm. But I've seen enough clips of it online, and I thought that maybe during the during that scene where they had the little blue guy on the table, that one of the transgender people behind him, that they were saying that his, you know,
he was exposed.
His beans were hanging out. And turns out this was a big misunderstanding, although it appears to be the person's testicles hanging out in this photo. Further photos and video. So someone really investigated this.
Yeah.
Clearly show it was, in fact, a hole ripped in his pantyhose. So, well, big misunderstanding, folks.
Boy, oh boy, we're going to have to fall on the sword for that one. So sorry.
That's absolutely insane. This was the opening ceremony we're talking about here. Okay. Steve says, I'm a Christian. I'm not surprised when non-Christians do non-Christian things. And that's exactly where I stand on this, Steve. I think that, 8 years ago, this would have been shocking, and there would have been people saying, no, it's their right to free expression. They're totally in the right. You're just a bigot. I'm seeing a lot fewer people come out and play defense for this opening. I think so many more people in the West are now have woken up. And this is, like I said, it's all passe at this point. It's boring. Them doing this kind of stuff is boring and expected. And I think that a lot of that is contributing to this move where people are wanting to see normal stuff. We just want to see a beautiful, you know, opening ceremony that I think things are changing before our eyes is what I'll say.
Yeah, and China was praised for their opening ceremony back when it was in Beijing. But, of course, everybody that was executing that at such a high level, it's a prisoner in their own country. So it's kind of like when you give them too much freedom, you see what happens. Mm-hmm. You got France.
Yeah.
No freedom. China, great execution.
We need to find a middle ground, right? Someone with just a little bit of freedom.
Thank you. 8:59, Jeff Porsche Show straight ahead on FM Talk 106.5.